RadioInfluence.com.
You know her from network radio, but now she's on the net and in your head. This is the Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence.
Hey, it's me. It's the Babe Cast. How very lovely are we? We're doing all kinds of things today. We've got to do a lot about the draft because the draft is here, and we'll do a lot about that. Also, I decided I am completely involved in football, so I decided, hey, it's March. Maybe I should figure out what's going on in the tournament time. And I'm kind of glad that we get to see the little, even the little tiny tournaments, but the big tournaments. So we'll be able to do that. So we'll do a lot about that. I was looking at a couple, by the way, you know, I don't want to say anything, but I do watch a lot of TV. And now I'm to the point where I'm like taping everything. So when I get in there at like, you know, 8 o'clock, I just roll through all the stuff that I've gotten in there and I'm all over it. By the way, I told you about last week. I once again saw this thing that's on PBS that's from Scotland, and I watched it for 45 minutes and I watched it and said, I think I understood four sentences of the whole thing. They're speaking a Scottish accent that I, and it's English. That's what's scary. Could it just be me? It could just be me. But I figured out maybe four sentences out of the whole thing, and I watched it for 45 minutes. I don't know why I keep watching that. By the way, they're getting horrible reviews, but that ABC thing of When We Rise, I've watched it since it's been on, and I thought it was kind of interesting. It's very focused on gay life in the 60s and the 70s, and they're pushing into the 80s and stuff. But, and it's all San Francisco, and I get all of that. But I hope that people, I wonder how they talk about it right now. I wonder how people are sitting in Iowa thinking about this, because I see it more as East and West Coast in that. But I think it's very interesting, and it seems to be right in a lot of the things that they've done for that. By the way, I sort of watched it a little, but now I've made a point. ESPN at 11 o'clock on ESPN. Do they still call it the Deuce or the Two or whatever the hell it was? Remember, I used to be on the Deuce and I didn't even know what it was. They're doing that OJ Made in America. And if you saw the other one that was on FX and all that, you got it. But this is totally what you saw. And if you're 25 right now, you have no idea what the hell I'm talking about. But we were there and we were on the edge of our seat sitting in the living room going, they're chasing after the Bronco. And it's all of that. All of it is put together. The Watts riots, everything that goes up to it. We're like in the third part that I saw. And they've now gotten them into going to court. But it's all real live stuff as opposed to the other one being a fiction of. And this is just spectacular. I understand now why it won the Academy Award, and I made a point of it. But it's on from 11 to 1, and I'll tell you one thing. You just have to watch it. Whether you watch it now or you do it later, just do it, because it really is spectacular. And now they have all the cops. They go, he did it, he did it, he did it. Everybody knew he did it. But it's sort of the way that they put that together. It's very, very interesting. So I've watched that. Anything exciting? I don't know. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to talk to my friend Chris Harry. He's been doing basketball, especially doing Gators basketball. And I said, talk to me about the SEC and tell me what's going on. You know, it's one thing when sometimes when somebody will put me on, they'll put me on a podcast and they'll be okay with me. But it's like, you're not my friend. Do you know what I mean? You don't know me from a long time. This guy's known me for a long time and he does not mince any words with me who hasn't watched basketball. And he made it very clear when I said to him, do you want to be on my show? And he goes, what? Why don't you just blow through it and go to spring training? I said, uh-oh. So he's making me crazy, but you're going to love it the whole time. Chris Harry's coming to join us. He's going to be fun. I'm the Babe. That's why they call it the Babe Cast. Did you miss me or what?
Come on now.
Come on, you must have missed me. Just because I waited till the end of February doesn't mean anything.
I mean, you understand that college basketball starts in November.
But I don't care about that because I'm into the Patriots and they won everything. So I'm even more involved in football at that time.
Now, oh, now you care about the Patriots now.
No, I've always cared about the Patriots. I have always cared about the Patriots.
No. You were Mets and Giants and Jets and all that.
What are you nuts? I've always loved the Patriots. I don't know what you're talking about.
No. You can't just jump on the Patriots.
You've been living in Gainesville too long. Okay, so you're up there, and I said to you, okay, I've done my Patriots. Now I have to know what's going on because I really don't care. I'm not going to watch it during December, and I'm sure not going to watch it in January. But now it's time for the tournament, so I said, Chris, please be on my lame-ass podcast.
The Super Bowl ended, like, a month ago.
I know, but it took me, like, 3 weeks to go through it. It was so grand.
Okay.
Hi.
What do you need?
Hi, sweetie. How are you? Well, I have to tell you something. I watched last night. I was watching it, and at some point they were up by 10 points, and I said, well, I'm going to go watch Michigan and Northwestern, and that was pretty good. But you know what? They came into town, and they handled it with Arkansas. It was a big game, yet they handled it very well, I thought, your Florida Gator guys.
Did they? The coaches thought it was a not a great game. And there was some slippage and stuff defensively in the second half. But, I mean, you know, Arkansas is a good team. So they're going to make some plays offensively and stuff. But, they've won 24 games.
Well,
I don't know if you know this or not, but they started playing in November and they started counting the games. They played in Tampa, actually, back in November. Played a game in Tampa. I'm sure you were there.
Yeah.
And,
God. Stop. I watch football 24 hours a day. Okay,
yeah,
so they
did.
All right. Can I ask you something? Let's talk about this team because they put all the seniors out and I thought that was very great and all that. But the team was really good. And I thought they come up. They are number two in the SEC now. Is that the way I look at the Gators right now?
Yeah. I mean, they played Kentucky twice and split with them. They handled them really well here by 22 and then lost up there. Obviously a very difficult place to play by 10. They're playing without their starting center, so they're still trying to figure out how to do that. But, they're a good team. They're they're a team that could easily make it in the second week in the tournament. Once you're in the second weekend, anything can happen.
Well, you know, that was one of the things because I looked at it and I thought, well, they're not all the people I ever heard of in my life yet. Okay.
No, but you don't pay attention to college basketball, so you've probably never heard of any of them.
That's right. I don't know anything until we get to the tournament. I don't care about it until the tournament time.
Are we on the podcast right now?
Yes, we are. This is the podcast.
Oh,
as lame ass as it seems. This is my.
Are we doing it right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, babe, how long have we known each other?
More years than I think I can even imagine now.
We're talking three decades probably going on maybe, and you and I are semi contemporaries probably in terms of age. But you're watching that Gator. But I know you know Rick Barry.
Yes, right? Well, I know who Canyon Barry is.
But you know who Rick is, right?
Yes, of course I know who Rick is.
Right. So now you know who Canyon is. So you can't say you didn't know any of those guys out there.
Yeah. Okay. I got that. I got that part of it. But we liked him. Okay. But we, you know. I mean, here's one of the things. Why is he going to school at Florida? Couldn't he go to a different school if he wanted to, like way over on the other coast or something like that?
I guess he could, but I mean, he grew up in Colorado. He wasn't a highly recruited kid out there. In fact, he didn't have a whole lot of scholarship offers, and two of Rick's sons. I believe Drew and John played at Georgia Tech under Bobby Kremins. And Bobby Kremins was the coach of College of Charleston at the time. And Rick Barry picked up the phone. He said, I got another son for you. And Bobby Kremins, without ever seeing Canyon play, say, I'll take him. So he ended up at the College of Charleston. However, Bobby Kremins got sick and never got to coach him. But Canyon had 4 years there, redshirted first year. And then the last year he got hurt, which enabled him, he had a fifth year eligibility left. So he was able to shop his services. He talked about Northwestern, talked about Miami where Rick played, but he ended up at Florida because of the nuclear engineering program. And because he thought he had the best chance to maybe have a special kind of season. Certainly he's been a part of that.
Did you really tell me the nuclear engineering is the thing he was interested in?
Well, not it's, I mean, he graduated in with a degree in physics already, and then nuclear engineering. The Florida is the only school in Southeast that has an active nuclear reactor that its master's postgraduate student to work with. So, in fact, I was trying to think of the other day when he was getting treatment on his ankle. I was walking through the training room, and I said, he's reading a book. I said, what are you studying? He said, introduction to radioactive detection. I said, well, I'm sure everyone on this team has taken that class. I know you took it, right?
Yes, I did. I absolutely did. Well, I love that he does all of that. You know, one of the things I was going to ask you about the SEC, but talk to me about Mike White, about you go with Billy Donovan, everybody's crazy for it. And people will say, are these Billy Donovan guys, or are these, you know, are they, is that who's here, or are these Mike White guys? How do you look at it?
Well, last year's team was all Billy Donovan guys except for one player, and there was obviously it's going to be a transition with that, because the team was on hand signed their scholarship papers to go play for a future Hall of Fame coach, and now he's gone. Now here comes a guy who looks like, you know, he's 20 years old. From Louisiana Tech. I'm quite sure very few of the coaches have ever heard of him, if any of them, to be honest with you. These guys aren't locked in like that. So, you know, they had to go through some stuff transition-wise in terms of getting to know each other. You know, Mike White has admitted that. He had to get to know how to coach these guys. He had to get to know these players and their families. And Casey Hill, had to get to know Mike White and how to play point guard in a completely different system. Billy Donovan ran a completely different system than Mike White ran. Mm. So that went on last year. It was a up and down year, ended in the NIT, not like anybody wanted it to. But then some redirecting of how to do things and some revisiting on what maybe they did wrong from both ends. Took place over the off season, and you know, this team, it came together and figured some things out in terms of playing unselfishly, and in terms of it doesn't have a star. Last year's team had a star in Dorian Finney-Smith. He was an all-conference player. They don't have a guy who, you know, you have to go to get a basket now. That's why they won 9 games in a row at one point, Babe, and in 7 of those games, they had a different leading scorer on the team. So there's not a single focal point player, especially offensively. This team wins with defense. That they use that defense to turn into transition offense, and this is the Mike White blueprint for doing things. And you know, he's shown he can win with these players he has. Obviously, in the bigger picture, you know, he has to go recruit. He's got a class right now that's coming in next year that's ranked in the top 10. So he's made some inroads on that front. But obviously, there's a lot we don't know about Mike White. But what we do know about him is he's 24-6 with his second team, and he's going to the NCAA tournament. And he's, you know, he has a chance still. Saturday, given what happens with Kentucky and given what happens with Florida at Vanderbilt, to have a share of the SEC title. Probably won't happen, but they're certainly still out there with one game left.
How do you look at the SEC right now as we get ready for the tournament? How do you see it?
Well, it ain't the ACC, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
but if you asked me a month ago, I'd say this league was not looking very good, but Arkansas is clearly going to the NCAA tournament. South Carolina is definitely going to the NCAA tournament. Vanderbilt is now on the cusp. If Vanderbilt beats Florida Saturday up in Nashville, they will have swept a Florida team, which is right now in the top 10, if not top 5 of the RPI ratings, which is how the NCAA seeds its tournament, right? I believe if you look at the bracketologists around, Vanderbilt is right there on the cusp of getting in. So they could have 5 teams in. Last year they got, I believe, 4 in and one barely got in. So it's not a great league by any stretch of the imagination, but it's probably not – doesn't deserve to get beat up like it does. But there's some teams out there that probably should have performed better than they have this season, whether I'm talking about Tennessee, talking about Georgia. Those are the ones that jump out at me. LSU has been terrible this year, but it's an okay league, not a great league, but it certainly has two or three really, really good teams that can maybe do some damage in the NCAA tournament.
You know, people are talking about that maybe coaches in particular should be writing down their 64 teams every week, like starting like 2 months ago. Are you buying that at all?
No, that's ridiculous. Because I mean, a lot of stuff can happen. I mean, if we were doing this a month ago, Mike Anderson, the coach of Arkansas, was going to get fired after they went up to Missouri. Missouri was winless in the league. I think 0-9 or something. And, they beat Arkansas, and Mike Anderson was supposed to get fired. Well, he won his next five games. Georgia Tech won some games it wasn't supposed to win. Josh Pastor doing a really good job at Georgia Tech in his first year. People didn't give them much. Well, they went on something of a tailspin. So, wherever the year is and these bracketologies and whatever, it's always a snapshot of what's going on at the time, and all of it can change. Florida was, I thought was playing as good as any team in the country when they lost their starting center for the season with an ACL injury. That's a snapshot in the time. But then, so how was that Florida team going to bounce back, having to replace a really big guy in the middle and a really good defensive player and rim protector? Well, they've had to manufacture some things, but it's all organic. And it all changes, and I think that's why we love March so much, because we get to the point where, anything can happen that first weekend. Certainly anything can happen the second one.
Why do you think you're on the podcast right now? Because I don't know, and you have to give me all this information, you see.
Well, I always tell people, babe, that like in March when all this craziness is going on, and people go, oh, I can't believe that Little Rock beat Purdue and all this. Well, those games all happen in November and December. When teams are playing non-conference games, there's all kinds of crazy upsets that happen. And just people like you aren't paying attention to them because you're too busy crunching the numbers in the college playoff standings.
Yes.
But it happened. So you shouldn't be so surprised that it's happening in March. It's just, are the stakes bigger? Well, absolutely they are. But there's college basketball is all about matchups. And when you're talking about the team that it maybe is the RPI 175 is playing the RPI, say 30, if they outmatch them in maybe like a two guard they're in their two guard situation, that's what makes March so cool, because it's just about how it's a style of play. If some high scoring team is going to come up against Virginia, or Virginia, which prides itself on its defense, is going to come up against a team that shoots a bunch of threes, Virginia could vanish just like that. I mean, that's what makes March what it is, and that's why we are riveted to our screens on Thursday and Friday and Saturday and Sunday. What was it? 2 weeks from now.
Well,
and I like the conference tournament week too.
Well, we like that. And what about the conference tournament? Because I'm very much into that. That's coming up, because now I'm watching basketball, obviously. And
right.
Well, I wasn't before. I was just all in love before. But anyway, now that I'm doing that, do you see any of those teams that you think can do well? One of those guys that maybe would match up, or do you have to wait and see how they figure it out after all the tournaments and all that?
I'm so locked in on Florida and the SEC. I mean, if you ask me, is there a surprise team from the SEC that can maybe beat some teams? I always look at guard play. I look at experience also. I mean, one of the reasons this Florida team is good is because they got a bunch of upperclassmen. And then I look at Vanderbilt, which is, I think their record, babe, is like 16-14 right now. But they have a senior, and they got a pair of really good juniors. I mean, anytime you have players like that who have been through stuff, there's nothing they haven't seen by then. And these aren't just like slappies. These are good players. So Vanderbilt in the SEC tournament, playing about 2 miles from its campus, in that beautiful Bridgestone Arena that out there, I wouldn't want to play them in that case. In terms of the bigger picture, I want to see how these tournaments play out, see how some of these teams are playing before I start diving into my bracket and what have you. Of course, I do know a little bit more about it. You'll be filling out a black bracket, however many you do, just blindly. You won't even know anything, right?
But I know some of them. I actually have seen a few things. I did see Oregon and UCLA. And okay. By the way, what's the slappy? Am I one of those slappy people? What does that mean?
I'll let you figure it out.
Well, no, I'm like, please give it to me. I love it already. Please tell me whatever the slappy people I want to be.
Okay, well, just assume that you are. How's
all right,
that?
Just assume that I am and all that. Well, no, I did see, I saw UCLA, and I saw, well, I saw that wonderful thing yesterday where there was like 1 second left, and the guy threw. Here's the thing I know about basketball, because although I'm not exactly very tall, you know, somewhat vertically challenged,
I did know that.
In high school, you don't throw it to the guy behind the guys. You know, you make sure he's in the front. You don't, you, if you're the back guy, well, you're standing there. And I was like, he throws it to the guy. He gets it, goes up, goodbye. And I'm like, well, Michigan, goodbye. And good for Northwestern.
Yeah, and I think that's cool. And here we are. You know, it's the first day of March, and that happens. Maybe that's an omen of things to come. I'm sure it is, because there will be games like that. But here's Northwestern, which is one of, I think it's 7 or 8 teams in all of the 347 in college that has never made the NCAA tournament. And now they're right there. And I think if they lost that game, they would have. I think some weird stuff might have had to happen to get them in. But a miracle happens for them, and they got Chris Collins, I believe, is the coach of that team. And I know a lot of people, obviously in my profession, went to Northwestern, who big time journalist school that were tweeting about it, and they're probably going to be in the NCAA tournament, which is a really, really cool story out of Chicago.
I think it would be great. I'd love to see that when you're doing your thing there. First of all, Syracuse, I don't know what happened to them, and then I wonder. I do have the one on Saturday. I'm going to see North Carolina and Duke. Yes, I do want to see that. But I'm wondering now, somebody used to be, oh, you would go here. You would go to Notre Dame. You go here. Let's say I'm going to Notre Dame. I'm going to Duke. I'm going to North Carolina, something like that. But now you're going to Arizona and you're going to Oregon. And all those things are different, because probably 15 years ago, there were a certain amount of schools that you went to if you were playing basketball. Now you go everywhere.
Yeah, and because mm-hmm. there's good coaches everywhere, and there's still the ultimately, Babe, when it's the last weekend or the Final Four, you know, I could probably write down 20 schools, and I could probably get 3 Final Four teams, right? And so they're always the same teams are in there. Every now and then somebody pops in there to be something of a surprise, but the blue blood schools most likely are going to be smack in the middle of things. I mean, but you have your moments, whether it was a couple of years ago, Lehigh beat Duke, Mercer beat Duke to knock them out of the tournament. There's always crazy upsets like that. But you're talking about Arizona. Arizona is a team much like Florida in that for years and years it was just a basketball purgatory. There was nothing there. Then Lute Olson came from Iowa and turned it into something much like what Billy Donovan did at Florida. You say what happened to Syracuse. I mean, Syracuse had its struggles last year and ended up in the Final Four with one of the great comebacks in the last, you know, 25 years of the NCAA tournament. So again, this isn't any surprise. Anything can happen. You're talking about the best teams, the big name teams still have big name players that can get hot and get on a roll and take their team to the Final Four, of course.
Well, do we take it in that? Do we say, okay, it's going to be Kentucky, it's going to be Louisville, you could probably throw 4 teams and absolutely be in there. But I mean, we may think it, but there's always that Wichita State or something that pops up that's really good that you fall in love with and then you can't stop it. You're crazy about them the whole time.
I know. I remember when Wichita State, I believe they were 31-0, and they got the 1 seed, and they ended up playing Kentucky in the second game of the tournament, and bye-bye Wichita State. And it was a great story that was over. So for every great story, you have another one. But I mean, let's face it, the George Mason kind of stories are rare. I'm trying to think of somebody. I mean, Temple with Nelson. Jameer had that great run, and I want to say, when was that? Like 2003, 2006. I don't remember when the hell that was, but they went almost undefeated for a regular season, ended up losing. Gonzaga. Everyone was saying they had a walk in the park to an undefeated season, then they lose to BYU at home just last weekend. So this is the time of year where people, I guess, are paying attention like you. So I mean,
right.
let's see where the bracket takes us, and let's see. It'll be a fun ride. We know that.
Now, I wanted, for people who don't know, I said to Chris, Chris, I need to know about basketball. And he said, well, why don't you just blow through it and go to spring training anyway? Well, no, I didn't want to blow through it. I want it because I only care about this. I understand that they play in November and December, but I'm not doing that. I'm watching football
January,
all the time.
And January and February.
But
January, February,
you understand it took me 3 weeks to come down from the Patriots win for their millionth time win. I can't help myself.
Okay.
You know, it's
fine.
True, but at least I know about this now. Now, I mean, I knew about Arizona. I knew about UCLA. And I saw them.
You knew about Oregon.
Well, I did see Oregon. I saw both of them.
Baylor. Who else? Baylor is a good team.
Baylor is a good team. Now, I also saw Duke in North Carolina not that long ago, and they're going to play again on Saturday. So I will be. And it reminds me of times when I went there. But
Florida State is having a half a year. Florida State is a team that's certainly built. They got two first-round draft picks on their team. One guy is a freshman, probably top five, top eight lottery pick. I mean, both the Florida and Florida State. If the way things are headed right now, could end up playing that first weekend in Orlando. So maybe you can actually get in a car and drive over, maybe watch a game in person. How weird would that be for you?
No, I'd rather watch it on TV.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure it's fine, but I would much rather watch it on TV where I can get up and get some tea in the middle of it. I don't need to go look for anything. I mean, it's a very good thing. And the other one was Gonzaga. Were you surprised? Because people said to me, "Yeah, but they're playing in the Western Conference," and I said, "They're playing Division I basketball. Who the hell cares? I mean, that's what they do. They deserve to get there. That's all." People were going, "Well, this team should have been better."
No, I mean, Gonzaga could easily be a one seed. I mean, they have a high RPI. I mean, I got to see them up close. Florida played them in Orlando and over Thanksgiving weekend and actually played them pretty good. I think Florida had a 10-point lead in the first half on them and ended up losing by four. Gonzaga is a very good team. They got NBA players on that team. They have size. They have skill in the backcourt. They're certainly capable of making a deep run, but did it surprise me that BYU, which isn't a great team, they're okay. Did it surprise me that they went into Gonzaga and won and ruined their undefeated season? No, it doesn't surprise me because it's hard to go undefeated in college basketball. Gonzaga is a great program with a great coach, and they're certainly capable of making it to the Final Four. I imagine there'll be in a lot of people's Final Four projections.
I love talking with you. Look how much more I know now after talking to you. Look at everything that I didn't know yesterday, and I know so much more, and I'm getting ready for the tournaments and everything. I'm very ready to go now thanks to this.
Okay, well, you lean heavy on those ACC schools because they probably get 10 or 11 teams in the tournament. Like I said, maybe 4 or 5 from the SEC. If they get 5, I think that'll be a nice little take from – but in terms of pay attention to the Florida teams, I mean, Florida State, and I think Miami's going to sneak in there also as one of those ACC teams. So the Sunshine State will be well represented. You'll be able to kick back from your beautiful beach place and just kind of, you know, whatever you want, put whatever libation. You got tea? Is that what it was?
Tea, nice, at my house, yes.
Nice cup of tea and watch the 12:21 p.m. Thursday, whatever the hell date is it. It's March 16th. You'll be glued to your television for the next, 96 hours.
And they can come, people can come in and say hi, but I'm not going. I'm watching the games. That's all I care about. Chris, you're the best. Thank you so much. I do appreciate it. It's good to talk to you, sweetheart.
Take care, babe. Love you. Bye.
That's my guy, Chris Harry. Love him from the Gators. That's what I'm telling you. Anybody could rip me like that if you've known me for that long. I mean, nobody else. I wouldn't be putting up with anybody, but I'm like, oh, God. All right, I'll be able and do all that. So now we know everything. I'm getting ready for the tournament. I'm very excited. Yes, and I did watch a little baseball a little yesterday, but I am all over the tournament right now. I got to do stuff because the combine's coming, and I'm loving for the combine. So we're going to talk to Mike Margetti, who's going to come and visit us. And if you look for him on Twitter, you can get him at Draft Maverick, at Draft Maverick. And look him up and you'll find him because Mike is pretty good. He's going to talk to us now. I want the biggest quarterback. There aren't any, I don't think. Running backs, all I want is a big-ass tight end that's almost 7 feet tall. We'll find out if he can figure that out. Let's go talk to Mike right now on the Babecast. Mikey, it's finally time for the draft. Everybody's getting ready. I saw something today that said Leonard Fournette showed up with 240 pounds. I go, that's not really good to get ready for the draft. But let's talk about it because I love, love, love the draft. So tell me everything I should know. What do you see so far? I mean, as people come in there, I guess the best thing to start you with is the quarterbacks are horrible. Is that not right?
That's actually not the case, in my opinion. It's not necessarily the greatest year. You don't have a guy that's a clear number one overall, but you've got obviously Deshaun Watson. There's very
right.
There's very, very widespread opinion on what he's going to be. Is he just, you know, a system guy that, you know, he's not big enough, he doesn't have a strong enough arm? But you also have the people that are saying, you know, he's a great leader. He elevated the Clemson program. He faced adversity and overcame it. He's a great player in the clutch situations. He has a good enough arm. Now, can he be more than an Alex Smith type? That remains to be seen. But, you know, I wouldn't bet against him. Let's put it that way. And then you have your Patrick Mahomes, who's one of the guys that I'm really high on. Out of a Texas Tech. So he's got the stigma of being in that air raid offense. Can he really translate to the NFL? But he has so much more physical talent than previous quarterbacks that have come through that system.
You know, one of the things, because you're talking about that, and the other one that comes to mind is the guy from the quarterback from North Carolina. And they go, Correct. He's the best this and the best of that. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't really think they're very good, but you're probably right. I'm sure you're right than I am. But, you know, I sort of wanted, it just doesn't seem there's nobody that busts out and say, this is a guy that's going to be taken in the first, you know, three draft choices of the number one draft. You're going to take it. It doesn't really seem that way. And you're talking about Watson. I'm like, he reminds me a lot of almost like Cam Newton in a way that they will follow him no matter what. It kind of sort of what's happened with the Bucks, and I see it with Winston, which is they will follow him wherever they want to. They believe in him now.
Absolutely. He is a very, very strong leader of men. Just character all around. I've never heard anybody say a negative thing about him as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Cam Newton kind of had some issues with his attitude. He's a bit of a front runner.
Yeah.
He had some issues in college where, you know, he might not have done everything on the up and up. Winston obviously had his issues, but they're competitors. So, you know, they do rub some people the wrong way, but when you get them on the field, they rally their troops. As far as the other quarterbacks go, with your Trubisky, you also have Deshaun Kizer at Notre Dame. Leadership is a little bit of a question mark with those two. I mean, Trubisky only has 1 year of starting experience. He wasn't really able to elevate himself beyond a guy that he physically should have been able to beat out for the job. So there are some questions as far as that goes. With Kizer, you look at a Notre Dame program, and yes, they did lose a lot of talent from last year, mm-hmm. but there's never any excuse for a Notre Dame program to finish the season 4-8, especially they started the season ranked. So there were some issues with, does he really mesh well with the coaching staff and their philosophies? I don't know if that's going to carry over. They kind of got into his head a little bit. You could tell that he lost confidence throughout the season because he would see one thing his way, but the coaches wanted them to do it another way. So there are a lot of question marks with those two. I'm not as high on them as the previous two that we mentioned.
What about the running backs overall? Because remember there was a time when it was like, we're not going to go for running backs right away because blah, blah, and they only last 4 years, blah, blah. And that went away, and now they've come back and looking at running backs again. It was like about 4 years where they were like, I'm not so sure I want to, and now that's gotten back to running backs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm kind of in that camp where I don't like taking running backs high because of the limited shelf life. They only have a certain number of hits that they can take. You very rarely see a running back excel past the age of 30. And realistically, there's usually depth in the draft where you can get a guy in the second, third, fourth, even fifth or sixth rounds that can contribute just as much as a guy that you would take in the first round. Even this past year, you look at Jordan Howard in Chicago, and stat for stat, he was right there with Ezekiel Elliott and behind a worse offensive line and losing, you know, on a losing team rather than a front running team. So there's definitely an argument to be made that why would you spend the value of a first round pick on a running back that you don't know how long they really have in the league versus taking guys in the second, third, and so on.
Does it also matter, too? I mean, like, if you go to play in Seattle or you're stuck playing with Cleveland, I mean, at some point you say, well, at least I'm with a great team. Or do you at least go to Cleveland and say, well, at least they're going to give me the football every 5 minutes?
That's an interesting question, because a lot of guys do lose motivation when they're not winning. And motivation, obviously, is a huge part of football. If you're not motivated to play, you're probably not going to perform very well. So are you just in it for the money? Are you in it because you love the game? Are you going to be one of those culture changers that goes to an organization that's been losing, and you're going to say, hey, we're not going to accept this anymore, and we're going to raise the level of play around you and motivate the guys around you?
You know, one of the things is we're talking about the running backs and the quarterbacks, and I'm hot for a tight end. Do I have a good tight end? And I'm not talking 6'2". I want them 6'5", and maybe 7 feet. You know, yeah. I mean, that's where I am right now with the tight end. I want, like, big-ass tight ends and big-ass wide receivers now.
I'm absolutely with you on that. And you see it with the Bucs with Mike Evans, and you see it with the Patriots. I've heard you're a Patriots fan with Gronkowski and Martellus Bennett. And there are definitely – this is a great tight end class. You do have your smaller guys, your 6'2", 6'3", kind of H-back types. But you have several that are 6'4 and above. O.J. Howard's the consensus number one right now. He's 6'5 and a half. One guy that's really picking up steam is David Njoku from Miami. He's a little bit shorter. He's in the 6'4 area, but he's super athletic. He's got more physical upside. You've got this guy, Adam Shaheen, out of Ashland. It's a really small school up in Ohio. Former basketball player that's 6'6" and a half, 270 plus pounds. So you do have your bigger guys in this year's draft that could definitely be difference makers at the next level.
Well, it's sort of, you know, I'm to the point now where I really want them to be big. And it's like, you know, the days, I mean, I think of like people like Rondé Barber, and I think of him, yeah, but you were like 5'8", and they were like 6 feet. Now you need, I mean, you got to be more like Sherman to be in that same, or otherwise he's going to jump up and you're going to be at his knees. You're going to be
absolutely
awful. So that's the, I mean, we're getting bigger, stronger guys all the time, and we need big, strong guys to receive too.
Absolutely. It creates mismatches. I mean, especially if you flex some of these guys out wide. One of the tight ends in this class, Bucky Hodges from Virginia Tech, almost exclusively played out wide, and he's a 6'6", 6'7" tight end. How are you going to cover him? Are you going to take a guy out of the box, which opens up the run game, or are you going to try to cover him with a 5'10", 5'11" cornerback, in which case you just throw jump balls to him? So, I mean, it definitely creates mismatches. They're chess pieces. So, I mean, you bring your more athletic guys in closer and you get them matched up against linebackers and safeties that he can outrun. And sometimes you flex your bigger guys out wide and you either take a guy out of the box or you have them mismatched against a smaller defender.
Mike, do you see a thing where do you say so-and-so is going to be a number one draft choice, but you say this guy is going to be a bust? And do you see it up front, or do we have to wait 2 years to say he's a bust, or 5 years?
You generally have to wait a couple years to definitively say that he was a bust. But there are definitely guys that I kind of put the buyer beware label on. I actually just did it earlier today on Twitter with the linebacker from Alabama, Reuben Foster, because a lot of guys are starting to talk about him in the top five now. And yes, he's athletic. He reads the play well. He gets there. But he's a hitter more so than a tackler. And he's got some neck and stinger issues in the past. And his style of play just doesn't seem to – I don't know if it's going to hold up long term. So he might be a guy that for a year or two is going to really flash. But how long is that going to be sustainable, the way that he plays?
That's interesting, too, because I, you know, a lot of times when you get into somebody, you get somebody that comes from South Alabama that I don't know anything about, and yet they turn out to be really good as you know, we've certainly seen the guy in with the Patriots defensive back doing that. But I wonder about that, because a lot of times you go, and he went where? It's funny, because sometimes when you – I was looking at somebody like Dallas one day, and they were just showing the offensive line, and this one was for – and it was very interesting, because you don't really go to South Dakota, and yet there are people like that that have spent their whole 10 years playing on a great team like Dallas, and they went to South Dakota, and we don't – do you – is that one of the things you really have to look for? You have to see what North and South Dakota and what not even, I mean, Wisconsin and things like that. And I'm not talking university of, but do you find out those guys all the time?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, personally, my draft database is close to 5,000 players each year. So, I mean, you're talking 5,000 players, and then maybe 500 of them actually get to play in the NFL at a given point. But you leave no stone unturned. If there's a guy that you hear about that might have some sort of development potential in Montana or some back road Louisiana, you go and you take a look. Because there are guys that don't get exposed to the big schools sometimes. Sometimes they played at a small high school that doesn't get the exposure. Or sometimes they were smaller players in high school and they hit a growth spurt after they were 19, 20 years old and already 2 years into college. Vincent Jackson that played for the Bucks is one of those cases. He was, I think, 5'11 coming out of high school, and all of a sudden he shot up to 6'6 at Northern Colorado.
Well, we like that. Whatever they were feeding in Northern Colorado, we like that a lot. When we look at some of the people that I'm looking at for wide receivers, there's a couple people in mind, and it's the guy from Washington, Ross. Mm-hmm. What do we know about him?
Ross is an explosive playmaker. He is fast. He's expected to run the 4.3s, if not even in the 4.2s. The issue with him is that he has also an extensive injury history. He's had torn meniscus in both of his knees. He's had a torn ACL, and he's had the dreaded microfracture surgery on one of his knees. So again, it's a matter of, you know, what's his shelf life? How long is he going to be able to hold up? Is it worth risking a first round pick? Yes, he's an explosive playmaker, but I'm looking at a guy in round two that can almost give me the same production that might be a little bit of a safer bet health wise.
Well, so I mean, but if you're looking at somebody like that, if you put him in number one, who do you go for number two? Or do you look at it and you say, this should go in one and two, this should go in two and three? Is that the way you look at it? Or you go, this one has to be number one, this one has to be number two when you're looking at wide receivers?
Well, it's really a matter. There's always such a smorgasbord, so to speak, of wide receiver talent. You've got your big guys, your 6'3", 225 guys. You've got your smaller, faster, 5'10", 180 guys. It's really a matter of what fits your system best. Kind of like running backs, I'm in the camp where I prefer to take more depth and diversity at the position than take a number one guy. Like, obviously, if there's a Julio Jones or a Calvin Johnson or an AJ Green that you just know is elite level talent, then yeah, I'm fine with taking that in the first round. But if you've got a guy that you're not 100% sold on, and you've got a guy that you think could be similar in the second or even third round, why would you use your first round pick to take that guy? You know, especially if there's a guy that you feel is so much better at another position.
Well, you know, I mean, I can see exactly what you're saying, because I am like, am I going to spend it in the first round or wait and get somebody that I feel just as good in the second round? Let me ask you a little bit about defense over there. Peppers comes to mind right away when I'm talking about the defensive backs, because I'm always looking for a defensive back. I just feel like you need your offensive and defensive line, and you've got to have a defensive back, or they're going to be sucking the whole day. They're going to be horrible the whole game. So how horrible? I mean, how good are they, or not so good, in the defensive backs this year?
It's such a great class for defensive backs, for both corners and safeties alike. And you spoke on Peppers, and he's actually a guy that might be adversely affected by the fact that there's so much other talent around him, because he doesn't have a true position. They don't – like, he played linebacker in Michigan at 205, 210 pounds. He's not going to necessarily be able to hold up at that position at the NFL. So moving him back to safety, though, is a position that he really hasn't played So it's more of a projection. You don't know what you're getting. You know what type of athlete he is, but you don't know how he's going to respond to reading his keys from safety as opposed to linebacker, or how he's going to handle being in coverage, which was something that he was able to do but not necessarily excelled in when he was at Michigan. Meanwhile, you've got guys that, you know, you've got your Jamal Adams, you've got your Malik Hooker, Buda Baker, Obi Melifonwu, that are they're guys that you know because you've seen what they've been able to do at the safety position already, and they've been able to excel there. So he's going to lose some ground to guys like that, especially Obi Melifonwu, who's kind of been more of a recent surge. He's a 6'4", 220-pound safety that can cover like a cornerback.
Well, I don't care who they cover as long as they cover somebody good. I mean, I don't really care because, I see guys that are in there that are really good, and I think to myself, well, you're good, but to me, I'm to the point now, if you're 5'10", I don't want you anymore.
Mm-hmm. And that's good.
Go ahead. But I mean, like, I don't quite, you know, it's wonderful that you're 5'10", but I don't want to look at you until you're 6'2". I mean, I'm at now.
Yeah, and that's the issue with Buda Baker out of Washington is that he's only around 5'10". He's kind of that nickelback, that Tyrann Mathieu, Earl Thomas. You talked about Rondae Barber earlier. He kind of fits that mold. He's played safety at Washington, and he projects to still play safety in the NFL. But at that size, is he going to be able to hold up? How's he going to be able to do in coverage? He can cover the slot, so he's more of a nickelback. But is he going to be able to hold up as a hitter at safety?
You know, one of the things when I look at it, it used to be, oh, I'll take this quarterback, I'll take this running back. But it's not like that now. You know, the way we look at it right now, I mean, I understand that Cleveland has, I think, the defensive, they're looking for a defensive end. But why they're not looking for a quarterback, I'll never know. But what about Myles Garrett? Because I hear about him all the time. I think he's really good. But how do I look at that?
He is an athletic freak, and he's going to show that this weekend at the Combine. He's a 6'4", 6'5", probably close to 270 pounds, long arms, has great bend. You know, he can get around the corner. He can pressure the quarterback. He can finish and sack the quarterback. He's also pretty good in run support. He's basically the total package as far as a defensive end goes. So he's really, really, really tough to pass on if you're Cleveland, even though they just drafted two defensive ends last year in kind of their rebuilding mode. But he's almost impossible to pass on. He's easily the number one prospect in this year's draft. I definitely see where you're talking about with get a quarterback, but is there a quarterback worth the number one pick, especially when you've got that guy with such elite talent that's sitting right there, you know, staring you in the face? Now, they've also got the number 12 pick. Is there still going to be a quarterback at 12?
There will be.
Do you wait and see if somebody maybe falls even further because they have the 34th pick also? So, I mean, they do want to bring a quarterback in, but they also drafted Kessler last year relatively high, I think second or third round, that they gave a chance to. He did pretty well. I mean, it didn't help him that he was playing behind a terrible offensive line, and he got, I think, two or three concussions last year. But, you know, they have something there that they kind of want to take a look at.
You know, one of the things when I started out with this about Leonard Fournette showing up there at the combine, and he's like 240. Is that what I said? Mm-hmm. 240,
yes.
Something like that. It's like, that's not really your weight. What are you doing showing up at the combine like that?
Well, I mean, you know, the scientific formula, force equals mass times acceleration. So the higher the mass, if he can still run a 4.4 at 240 pounds, he's generating more force. So, I mean, he said in an interview that it was water weight and some of it's going to come off. But I mean, how much water weight could it really be? He played right around 230. So, I mean, if you expect him right around 230, 235, if he can still run a 4.4, he's more of a straight line guy anyway. I'd want to see what kind of quickness numbers he puts up in the shuttle drills and the three cone. But I mean, for what he does, the bigger you can be, it's kind of the better.
Now, how far can you run the 40-yard dash? Do you know yet? Have you figured this out?
I used to be able to run it pretty well back in high school, but those days are well behind me.
I'm still looking at a good 29. I think I'm fairly good at that. I think I would be. Mike, I love talking with you. We'll talk again, and thank you so much for this. I love talking with you. Thank you a bunch.
Absolute, babe. My pleasure.
Well, there you have it. Mike Rigetti is his name. Look at him at Twitter, at Draft Maverick. You can find him. He knows what he's talking about. You can always look at me if you want to, at Real Sports Babe. That's how you find me there on Twitter. I can't do anything but Twitter. That's the best I can do. Well, I'm going to do baseball coming up, but more importantly, I'm going to sit around and I'm going to watch basketball, 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 at least for the next few weeks. I'm going to be all crazy for it. All right, we'll do wonderful things. And yeah, I can run that 40-yard dash in 29 flat. You don't have to worry about it. I'm the Babe. It's the Babecast on Radio Influence right now.
If you know the Babe at all, you'll know the show never ends. Follow her on Twitter at Real Sports Babe and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. This has been the Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence.